It's easy to feel it, but oftentimes that feeling sometimes comes with guilt, right? It's, if you're anything like me, you feel like, oh man, I can't do this on my own. Somebody figured it out, and then they had to come and save me, right? They had to pull me out of this. And so that thanks comes less with like an actual feeling of gratitude and more a feeling of, if I don't say something right now, this is just going to get awkward, right? I'm going to look like I'm smooshing you, or I'm just trying to get something out of you, or I'm trying to wring you out. But I really hope that the first couple of weeks we can see, as we've been discussing this, that true thanksgiving and true gratitude is not as much about us as it is the one who was giving. And I'm going to say that again. I hope that you can see this for the last couple of weeks, and we're not going to end this week either with it. I hope that that heart of thanksgiving, we're not actually trying to change your or push away the guilt that you're feeling, because I promise you, especially this week, you're going to feel that guilt, all right? I promise you. And if you don't feel it, it's because you're ignoring me the whole time. You will feel guilty at some point today, and I'm not apologizing for it. But I am going to say I'm not trying to push away the guilt. What I'm trying to do is to have you see who gave, and that his desire was that you never felt guilty. That was his desire, was that you never needed to feel that guilt. So, as we jump in this morning, the last couple of weeks we've been talking about, and we're in this series called Thanks For. The first week, we talked about thanks for loving me, right? Pastor Don was talking about the thanks for loving me. And he defined and was describing what true love was. In fact, in that week, he really kind of honed in on the fact that God is love, that he is the embodiment of love. And then the next week, we went into thanks for using me, right? Now, first, I hope that you can see that we were defining love before we were defining using, because it's very difficult sometimes for us to say thanks for using me. Instead, we want to respond with, well, thanks for using me, right? It's all intonation. That's the thanks I get, right? I gave you my life. I gave you my time. I gave you, and that's the thanks that I get. And I hope that you can turn that around and see it's not thank me for using me, right? Where's my thank you? But instead it is thank God for allowing me to be used. God, thank you for allowing me to be used, for being a small part of your huge story, right? And that was last week. Well, this week, we're going to jump in, and we're going to see, thanks for all that you've done for me, right? That's this week's, it's a couple more words. And as I was looking at this week, and I've been looking at this week for a couple of weeks, I have bounced around to a few different passages that I was going to use, and I was telling Caroline, my wife, I was telling Caroline, you know what? I really wanted this one piece, right? There was this one chapter that I wanted to go through in John, and I wanted to talk about suffering, right? Thank you, God, for letting me suffer, right? And then I thought, you know what? That's the week before Thanksgiving. That's not the best. And I'm really happy that he was pushing me away from those verses. So instead, I decided to jump into a completely different passage. And it's probably a passage that you've heard either read to you at some point, you've heard it described at some point. You may not even know the name of it, but I guarantee you, you know the storyline of it. And that is a story called The Prodigal Son. Right? Now, there's another way that that's referred to, and that is just simply the lost son. Right? Now, what most of us don't know is that that comes in three other huge parables that Jesus talks about. But before we jump into those other three, and I'm not going to describe all three to you, I just want you to know that that was the last in a row of three parables. Before we jump into that, I really hope that I want you to see that the first week, there was a word that was defined. And it was how Pastor Don started the sermon. Right? In any way that you're trying to talk about a term, the best way to do that is, hey, let's define terms. Right? Let's define the term that we're all going to discuss. And so he used an Oxford definition of gratitude. Now, when I heard that, I wrote it down. Not that I didn't need to write it down. I could have just looked it up later. But I wrote it down, and I studied it just a little bit to see, okay, what does it actually mean? It's okay to know the definition, but what does it actually mean? So I wanted to go ahead and break it down for you. The definition is to express to someone that you are pleased about or are grateful for who they are or something that they have done. And I'm going to read that again. To express to someone that you are pleased about or grateful for who they are or something that they have done. Now, I broke that down. The first thing is to express. To express. I know, you guys are like, okay, cool. What that means is that we don't just receive it and then just turn around and walk away. Right? Gratitude is an expression. It is a action. Now, what's interesting about gratitude is that it's actually not just simply an action, it is a reaction. Gratitude, in and of itself, is a reaction. So, the question comes to is how do you react to something that was done for you? How do you react to the people in your lives? Are you reacting with gratitude, or are you reacting with a sense of entitlement? Are you reacting with thanksgiving, or are you reacting selfishly? Told you, you're going to feel guilty at some point, all right? If it already happened, you're welcome. It's already done. We can keep going. All right, so that's the first thing. It's an expression. It is a reaction. The second line to that is, to someone that you are pleased with. That is an emotion. It's heartfelt. It's a heart feeling. Meaning you are reacting to something that has changed you. Not just something that was done to you. Not just something that you can take for granted. It's an emotion. It's something that actually made you feel the warm and fuzzies inside. Right? So it is reacting to an emotion, but what caused that emotion is something that they have done. So it's an actual action. So the definition of gratitude is that there was an action, some kind of warm, fuzzy feeling that was felt, and then a reaction to that warm and fuzzy feeling. There's a change that is involved, and then you react to that change. So the question becomes, has there ever been, and I want you guys to discuss this at your table, has there ever been a time when you have received something or you have gotten something that was completely unexpected? Could be good or bad. Completely unexpected. Right? It kind of goes off of what Pastor Don was talking about. Where somebody, they just kind of heard that you were in a state. And unanimously, they just gave you something, right? That could be financial, that could be help, that could be time, that could simply be prayer. Has there been a time when you have received something that was completely unexpected? And then what was your reaction to it? I told you I'd give you guys a little bit more time to talk with each other. Now you can push unpause. Go. All right, so as I was mentioning, you've probably heard this parable before. This is a quite a long parable, honestly, so I'm not going to read verse for verse every part of it. Instead, I'm just going to tell you the story, and as we're telling you the story, I'm going to pause a couple of times and describe to you what's going on, all right? But I also wanted to kind of set this up. Why was this parable even said? Why did Jesus even use this parable, and why did he tell this parable, and why was this parable even needed? And the first thing I wanted you to really see is, what is a parable? All right, I keep using this term. What is a parable? So a parable is something that's just simply a story that represents something, a point that he's trying to get across. And Jesus was one of the the masters of using stories to get a point across. He was a master at it. And not only that, but he was a master at letting you feel the guilt without really building a wall. Like you feeling the point without the wall being built, unless the wall was already there. So I wanted to go ahead and start this with just the first few verses in Luke chapter 15, verses 1 through 3. This is why Jesus told this story or this parable. It starts with, "The tax collectors and the sinners all came to listen to Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law began to complain." Man, because they had every right to do that. Right? "They began to complain. They said, 'Look, this man welcomes sinners, and he even eats with them.'" Now, that's a total Jewish cultural thing. To eat with someone, meaning that you're an equal with them, that you recognize them, that you would sit with them. Imagine people in your own life. And there is a difference between meeting up just randomly in the street or in the grocery store and inviting somebody over to your house. All right, there's a total difference between those two things. I think we can all feel that. So that's really what they're saying here. They're saying, "Look, this man welcomes sinners," meaning he talks to them. He's cordial with them. He gives them the time of day. But not only that, he eats with them. And then Jesus told this story. How beautiful is that? They come up with this huge accusation. Right? Jesus is just discussing in public right now. And these Pharisees and keepers of the law, they come up and they say, "Look at this guy. Look at this guy. This is the one who welcomes sinners." Right? The way that I imagine this is it's almost like they're trying to vie for the attention that Jesus already has. Right? Everybody's listening to Jesus and they're like, "This is the guy you want to listen to? He welcomes sinners. He even eats with them. Like, don't listen to this guy." They're trying to ruin his credibility. In many ways, that would be what we would think is an attack. They're attacking his credibility, or at least that's what they think they're doing. And you would assume, and most of us in this room would react, how? If we're honest. Exactly. You're going to attack my credibility? I'm going to attack yours. Now, who in that situation actually had the authority to attack their credibility? Jesus. He could have, in every single way, said, you want to attack me? You're telling me that I'm a hypocrite? You're telling me that what I'm doing is wrong? You're telling me that I'm not loving? You're telling me that I'm doing it wrong? That's what you're telling me. And instead, here's what he does. He tells a story. In fact, he tells three stories. He starts with the lost sheep. And I'm sure that we have all heard that story in some way, shape, or form also. Right? There's a shepherd, he has 100 sheep, he puts away the 99, he goes after the one, right? We've all, in some way, shape, or form, heard that one. And then there's the one that's not really talked about, the one that's the lost coins. And really, honestly, it's a really short parable that he tells in between the two more well-known ones. You got the lost sheep, lost coins, and then you got the one that we're going to talk about today, the lost son. And how he reacts to them attacking his credibility, them attacking the fact that he's hanging out with and welcoming sinners, and the fact that they're attacking the fact that he's eating with sinners, and the fact that he's just living his life this way, is by telling three stories. But the last one I want to jump into today. So the prodigal son story, I'm going to set it up. Again, I told you I'm not going to read all these verses. There's a ton of verses that are a part of it. I'm just going to set up this story and let you know that there are three main characters. You have the father, you have the older son, and the younger son. Now, sometimes, whenever I'm telling this story, I'm going to say the older brother and the younger brother. All I'm trying to do, I am a younger brother, by the way, all I'm trying to do is give you perspective of who I'm talking from. Doesn't mean that there's another person, it's just that the older brother wouldn't say the younger son. He would say his little brother, right? And the little brother wouldn't say, well, the older son. He would say the older brother, right? So whatever perspective I'm talking about, there's really only three people that I'm going to be talking about this whole time. But it starts like this, and you really have to see the culture behind this. Because if you don't understand the culture, it just looks like a random story of two guys, one's a jerk, and the other one's just there. And then there's this father that gets run over. Right? I mean, what kind of a dude does that, right? So if you don't know the culture, if you don't understand the culture, it's all lost on you. So I'm going to start with this. The whole story starts with a father that has two sons. Now, he's a rich father, and he has two sons. The younger one, the younger of the sons, comes to him, and he says, Dad, or man, or guy, or dude, because of what's going to happen next, I'm going to promise you he didn't probably start that with Dad. I want my inheritance. Now, most of us would know what an inheritance is. An inheritance is just simply something that most of us would either, if it's our inheritance that we're leaving would mean we're not here anymore. Right? That's how inheritance works. You inherit something after the person has left. And by left, I simply mean dies, right? They are no longer with us. The inheritance is now left. Jewish culture says two things. The older son would get what is called a double blessing. So when the younger son comes and says, Dad, guy, I want my inheritance, what he's actually asking for is a third, if we can do the math, double. Do I need to do all these fractions with you? Are we good? Okay. The younger son gets a third of the inheritance. The older son would get two-thirds of the inheritance, right? So when he comes up, he asks the dad, I want a third of everything you got. It's mine. Give it to me. Now, there is so much that is implied with that. So much implied with that. First of all, the younger son comes up and he says, guy who's raised me, dude who's been with me since I was little, you're now dead to me. Yeah, let that sink in. I no longer want to associate myself with you in any way, in any shape, or in any form. Give me what's mine, I'm out. That's how this whole story starts. Now, the father could have responded one of two ways. Now, there's a third way, but that's just ignoring the whole situation. He could have rebuked him. Rebuke just simply means, you're a little child, get back to work. Know your place, and we'll pretend like this never happened, right? That's how he could have responded. He could have responded with, I'm the dad, you're the son, shut up. Get out. It's mine. Or he could have responded the way that he did. And the way that he did was, is he took a third of his property, a third of all that he had, he monetized it, and gave it to his son. Now, I want that to sink in. That was his response. Now, I want you, just for one moment, it's not a discussion table, we don't get another one of those for a while, right? I want you to just for a moment let that sink in. How would you feel as the father if your son, who you have loved, now I'm gonna walk down memory lane for you really quick, right? My parents used to always say, whenever I would say, hey, not now, right? Well, what are you doing to me, right? And they would always say the same thing, and it always embarrasses you, but it always puts you in your place. I changed your diapers, right? I changed your diapers, meaning I saw you at your lowest and most humblest, all right? When you were in need, I was there, and I loved you through it. Now imagine the son coming up to the one who has done those things and says, you're dead to me. I no longer want to associate myself with you. Your name is no longer what I want. And imagine the father's response. It's not just simply, oh, okay, he pulls out his checkbook, writes half the, have a good life. There is emotion that is involved, I promise you. And we have to see that emotion throughout this entire parable. So let's move on. Next, the younger son, I tried to push son and brother together. The younger son then goes off to a far-off land. Again, one thing that you have to see by this is you have to see the culture. Simply all that means is that he left the Jewish society. He went into a Gentile land, right? He left even his own culture. He wanted nothing to do with anything that he was raised with. And he went into what we would consider the world, right? And he began to live worldly. He ran off. He left. And he began to do very worldly things. Now, before you just hear very worldly things, because some of us are like, well, I know what that means. Really, all it means is very self-centered, selfish, arrogant things. Things that would appeal to himself and no one else. Things that would only be good for himself and no one else. Things that he defined as good. That's what he began to do. And he had all the money to do it. He had a third of his dad's inheritance, and he began to spend. Right? Some of us would say he began to make it rain. That guy made friends. That guy made acquaintances. That guy began to live on the streets and did whatever he wanted to do. Right? People began to enjoy being around him for a very specific reason. He had money. We can do whatever we want when this guy is around. This guy will pay. And this guy simply wants what's best for him. And that's how he begins to live. So he goes off to a far-off land and he spends how much? All of it. Not just some of it. He doesn't keep some of it. He doesn't invest some of it. He spends all of it. Could you imagine that? Now, imagine being the dad. You worked your whole life for that. You kept it for them to be able to live off of. And that is the reaction to your action. That's what we would say. That's the thanks I get. You wasted everything. But let's keep going. The younger son then decides, as he is sitting in this kind of, I've wasted everything, I have no more money, I have no more friends. Why does he have no more friends? No more money, right? He's got no more friends because he's got no more money, which means how many friends did he have at the beginning with? None. Okay, perfect. So he's had no friends the whole time. He just figures it out. And he's in the lowest point with no money. And he says, you know what I'm going to do? I got to go and just try to live. I got to get a job. If that's not humbling enough, I got to go get a job. Now he's in a far-off land, and he begins to be a pig farmer. Again, Jewish culture. Got to see Jewish culture. That is like the lowest of the low. Pigs equal no bueno when it comes to Jews, all right? They are dirty, gross, disgusting animals. You don't want to be around them. It's no good. They're gross. In fact, so much gross that they would consider them to be sin-filled animals, right? You don't touch them. You don't eat them. You don't touch them. You're not around them. And what does this guy have to do? He's got to go hang out with them, feed them, touch them, clean them, make everything right with them. He's now a pig farmer. Awesome. Man, if that's not the lowest point in a Jewish boy's life. I got no more money. I just told my dad he was dead. I just left my family. I've cut off all ties. I've now spent everything I thought I had. I've got no friends, and I am now feeding pigs. I am hopeless. I'm hopeless. But on top of that, he's also very hungry. And he begins to look at the pig food. And I think we've all seen the Disney show where they're just so hungry and they start to imagine things, right? A chair becomes a turkey and all of those. That's how I see this, okay? Prodigal son sitting with the pigsty and he looks at the pig food and he's like, that's the best I've seen all day. Imagine that. The pig slop, he looks and says, yep, that's how hungry I am. And then it begins to go through his mind. Here's what's next. It begins to go through his mind. And the next thing that goes through his mind is the servants of my father are better treated. They have more hope. They're fed better. They feel better. You know what I got to do? And this is where you see the turn. He, in all ways, shapes, and form, has hit rock bottom. And he looks and says, I'm going to go ask my dad if I can just be a servant. I've got to go back to my father's house. He doesn't even say my house. I got to go back to my father's house. And I'm going to ask if I can just simply be a servant. I'll just work for him. Now imagine the turn of events that have now happened, okay? Now, I've tried to describe to you about 5 to 6 verses, but there was so much packed into that. Now we're going to fly, all right? You get down to, he's coming home. Now, I want you to imagine, if you've ever been into a helpless, hopeless, hungry situation, imagine as you're getting closer and closer to the thing that you are headed towards, what's going through this guy's head. I'm about to see the dad that I just told was dead. And when he asks me, hey kid, why do you look like this? I'm going to have to tell him I wasted a third of his inheritance. And I'm going to have to tell him, and this is the hardest thing for any kid to swallow, I was wrong. Dad, I was wrong. Now again, two options here, okay? So he's coming back home. He walks up, and I always imagine there's a hill, okay? So just bear with me, okay? There's a hill. I always imagine a hill, okay? So as he's walking up this hill, and he knows this is the last hill that he's walking home with, he knows he's been raised here, okay? He knows what's at the top of that hill. He's going to start seeing the home he was raised in. He's the closest he's ever been back to home since then. And he's coming back, and he crests the hill, and he's already expecting the tongue lashing he's about to receive from his dad. Right? I told you you were an idiot. I told you this wasn't smart. I told you this wasn't what you should have done. Of course you can be my servant, but you're going to be the lowest of servants. Right? That's what he's expecting. And he's coming back up and over this hill. And what happens? The dad runs to him. And then yells at him. No. The dad runs to him. And he lifts him up. And the son starts to speak, right? Because I'm sure on that whole journey back home from that far off land, he has recited this in his head. Okay, here's what I'm going to tell him. I'm going to tell him first, I'm sorry. Okay, first, I'm sorry. Second, my bad. Third, I want to be a servant. Fourth, it's all gone. Please don't ask about it. Right? And he gets to the point where he says, I don't even deserve to be called your son, right? Halfway through what he's been reciting and memorizing in his head, and the dad instead interrupts him, and he says, of course you're my son. Now, if you were to read it, nowhere does it say that. Nowhere does it say, of course you're my son. I've accepted you back into my family. You get a portion of this, and you're now my son, right? Everything is back to normal. Again, culture. You got to see the culture, which leads us into multiple symbols that happen on this last time. There were multiple actions that happened. The first was he embraced him and he kissed him. Hug and kiss. That is absolutely of vital importance. You have to see that. So he embraced him and he kissed him. You don't do that with a servant. You do that with a son. A father doesn't do that with a servant. A father does that with a son. So there's already a wall that's broken down. The second thing that happens is he asks for the best robe. And there are three main parts to this that you have to see from this. He asks for a robe, a ring, and then something that most of us would always lose, a pair of sandals. Some of us would assume that the sandals were just the fact that he's walked so long that he worn out his own sandals. Some of us would assume that it's just because maybe he lost his sandals, or he sold his sandals, or that's what he was eating, right? When pig slop and leather, I mean, you get to a point, all right? And so we have no idea, in our minds, we have no idea why that part would be in there. But I'm going to tell you why each three of these main symbols are important. The first is the robe, which, by the way, if we're honest, where's the best robe? Where is the best? Think about this. Where's the best robe? When he says, I want the best robe, where is it? He's wearing it. He's not saying, hey, bring the best robe that isn't this one. Which means what? He takes off his own robe. And he lays it on his son. Second thing. He says, bring a ring. That's huge in this culture. It literally implies you're a part of the family. All authority comes with a symbolic ring. He says, give him back his ring. Give him the ring. This guy's in the family. But then this last part, this is huge. It's almost like the dad just knew what this son was coming back to, right? He knew that he was so humiliated, he obviously wasn't going to be asking to be a son again. Instead, he was probably going to ask to be a servant. Now, during that time, servants weren't given sandals. They weren't given any kind of footwear at all. Some say that the reason for the fact that they weren't giving any footwear is because then they would run off, right? So they weren't given any footwear. But when the father looks at the son and he says, bring sandals, he says, bring sandals for my son, he's already giving them the status of saying, you're not a servant. You're not coming back as a servant. You get my robe. You get the ring. And you get the status. So he's given him three huge pieces that we cannot overlook. Now, it doesn't just end there, because then what he says is, all right, the time has come. Bring the fattened calf. Now, tons of people have thought about what this reasoning behind the fattened calf was. Some people think that this was a calf that he was fattening up for this purpose, and always just in hope that his son would come home. Which I think that's kind of a warm and fuzzy thing to think about. That he was always fattening up this calf, waiting for his son to come home. Some would think that it was just for a simple celebration that was coming in the future. Right? Something. Could have been anything. Some think that it was for a sacrifice. Some kind of sacrificial fattening up of the calf. But here's what's important. It didn't matter what the purpose of it was. That was now what it was. Whatever the purpose was for doing it, that's now the most important reason. So he says, bring the calf that we've been working with for the celebration, whatever that was, it's time. It's that kind of a celebration. This is not just simply a give him a ring, give him sandals, let's go back to work. This is pause everything. My son, and this is such a beautiful way to say this, who was dead is now alive. My son, whom I lost, I have now found. He's home. My son is home. That's just like, whew. Bring the fattened calf. We're celebrating. my son is home. Now, we could end the story right there, and all of us are like, man, that was such a beautiful story, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah, that was so good. But there's an ending to the story. And what's very interesting about this is the fact that, honestly, we don't put a whole lot of emphasis on the older son. But he comes back in the picture. This guy is coming back in, right? He's coming back in from the fields. He's worked so hard, okay, while his little brother was off in that far-off land doing whatever he was going to do. I've been working for my dad, doing my business. I've been keeping everything down, right? I'm the good son. He is not, right? We all have siblings. If you don't, this is how it acts, all right? That's just how it is. I'm the good one, and then there's the other one, right? Or the other ones, right? I'm the baby, and they ended with the best. Let's just put it that way, all right? So we get to that, right? Older son comes in from the field. He's worked. He's exhausted. He walks in. He sees what's happening, this massive celebration. He looks over, and he's like, hey, where's the fattened calf? Wait a minute. What is this? Who is that? Who is wearing the best robe? Who's got the ring on? And why is he wearing sandals? And why is my dad arm around him? And why is everybody excited? My brother's home. Right? You see the reaction? The dad says, my son is home. The brother says, my brother's home. Why is my brother home? Probably just needs more money. He's just wanting to earn favor with dad again. I got to go tell dad. Right? I got to go make this right. Dad, come here. Right? But here's what's beautiful, okay? You get to see the same reaction to both sons. The first one, son pops up, again, it's in my mind, son pops up over the hill, dad sprints to him, embraces him, hugs him, treats him like a son. Here's what's awesome. Celebration is happening. Fattened calf is happening. His younger son has returned. And what does the father do? He leaves the celebration to go and talk to his other son. Same amount of love. Same amount of intentionality. The dad walks out and he says, son, what's going on? Why aren't you happy? Your brother's come home. Your brother has come home. Like, why aren't you excited about this? He's repented. He's returned. He's here. Why aren't you happy for this? And it's because, and I really want you to know, in many ways, I think that this story should have been called The Lost Sons. Because both sons were lost. One was just way more worldly about it, way more outward about it. And the other was way more inward about it. He never saw himself as son. He never experienced, truthfully, the father's love. He just felt entitled to it. It was his. This is all mine. My brother took everything else. Now it's all mine. I'm working for what's mine. This is my dad, my favor, mine. I got to go tell dad that this jerk is home, and I got to remind him that this is still all mine. Don't divvy it up again. It's mine. Remember that. Which leads me to, and I just wanted you guys to see this. I thought of this analogy. Everybody see the difference? No? All right, let me do this. Now, do you see the difference? You're welcome. You see the difference? Here, I'll do this. You see the difference now? Which one would you rather have? Why? Come on, you don't even know what's in here. You're like, doesn't even matter what's in there. I trust this one. Now, what if I told you that this was hydrogen peroxide? Now I'll take my chances. I'm going to tell you, this is just coffee grounds, all right? Now, we all said the same thing, right? We all said the same thing. This is the one I want. This is the one I trust. This is the one I want to be around. This is the one that's healthy. And then there's the other one. Now, then I told you what truthfully it was. From the outside perspective, this one looks great. But on the inside, it's not what you think. Outwardly and inwardly, this one is definitely what you think. This one's not hiding it. This is why this should be called the lost sons. It's because the older son was not found, he was not there, he was not experiencing the father's favor, he was not seeing who he was the entire time. He was never what he looked like. He had never truthfully found the Father. He had never truthfully expressed gratitude. Instead, he expressed entitlement. Which bleeds me to the summary of all of this. And that is, we're either one of two people at some point in our life. We're either the prodigal son, or as I like to call it, the prodigal sinner. Right, we're either the prodigal sinner, which prodigal just simply means reckless, selfish, arrogant, egotistical, self-aiming. Right, we're either the prodigal sinner, where everything about us has chosen the world. Everything about us is reacting to the world that's around us. I want, I want, I want. Those things look delicious. Those things look awesome. Those things look good for me. And we react with, I'm going to give in to that, and that is my identity. We're the prodigal. We're reckless. We're reckless with our life. We're reckless with our health. We're reckless with our time. We're reckless with our relationships. We're reckless with everything. We're the prodigal sinner. But then there's some of us who are the proper sinner. We're just the proper sinner. Right? When I sin, at least I'm not that bad. I mean, I go to church. I read my Bible. I do these things, right? I'm just a proper sinner. I sin the right way, whatever that means. Right? We're the proper sinner. We come in here, and on a face value, we all look like we're just great people. On the outside, we look like we can be trusted. On the outside, we look like we're totally found. On the outside, we look like we're healthy. On the inside, on the outside, we look like everything is put together. And then when you get on the inside, it's not what you think. We're proper sinners. Because we hide it. Please don't ask me what's on the inside. Please don't ask me what's on the inside. Please don't ask me what's on the inside. Right? Just look at the outside. I look good. Right? And so we're proper sinners. Others of us don't try to hide it. It's just who we are. We're prodigals, we're reckless. It's what we do. But here's the question. Who needs to be fixed? You can say it, it's okay. Both of them. What most of us are saying, just the dirty one. Just the other one. We're the older brother. Only one of them really needs it. But then you have a third option. And the third option, because some of us would say, hey, you know what? I'm not a proper sinner. I really do believe that Jesus Christ died to save me from my sins, and I am expressing the gratitude of that. I really am. I'm expressing who he is. I know who he is. I know how lost I was. I know that I was lost, okay? I know it. And I am standing humbly, or actually kneeling humbly before my Heavenly Father, and I know that none of this is what I deserve. And to you, I call you the penitent sinner. The penitent sinner just simply means that you know you're unworthy. You know for a fact that when the Father said, "You are my son or daughter," you did nothing to deserve it, nothing to earn it. It wasn't that you worked hard enough. It wasn't that you slaved your whole life for him, and that's why I get this rightful place. It's simply that he chose me. And I have a few things that I have to do. So I'm going to encourage you to react in this way. First, every person in this room has to come to the conclusion that there was an action. And that action was on our part. We looked at our Heavenly Father and we said, "Give me my life. I'm out of here." And we rebelled. We sat in rebellion. Now, at some point in our life, we decided, or we're still deciding, to return. But that return doesn't come with, "Hey, I just want to be a servant. I don't want to do anything. My bad. You're great. I don't deserve any of this." That return comes with something. And the son started it. He said, "I'm unworthy." And the father interrupted him. That was enough. What the son said was just enough, because he repented. First, it started with rebellion. Then he returned. Then he repented. And that repentance led to one of the best things that I have, or the best things that I can give to you. And that is restoration. The father restored his rightful place with his son. He did not say, "Hey, I got another servant going on. We got one more to clean up. We got the worst guy now," right? He said, "My son has returned." He looks to everyone and he says, "My son is back." And there was restoration. Which leads to what I hope that you can see this whole month that we've been talking about. Thanks for. That's rejoice. It is a reaction. If we're looking and we have said, "Hey, look, I was in rebellion, okay? I was in rebellion. I went to the Father and I looked at the Father and I said, 'Hey, everything that is mine, give it to me,' which really is just our life." If you go, that's what he gave you. Right? What is our response to the air in our lungs? What is the response to the life that he has given you? And it should be one and only thing. If you have come back and repented and said, "Look, I was in rebellion. I thought that this was mine. I wanted to do what I wanted to do. This life was mine. This is mine." And then you ruin it. Every one of us do. And we come back and we look and we say, "My bad. I was wrong. I want to experience your love." And he says, "You are now my child. I don't call you slave. I don't call you servant. I'm going to call you child." Imagine that. The Heavenly Father looks down, and when you have rebelled and you have lived a sinful life and you come back to him and he looks at you and you say, "Look, this was my bad." And he looks at you and says, "I love you. You're forgiven. I love you." And that relationship is restored. So what is gratitude? Gratitude is that expression. It's that reaction to a heartfelt something that changed you. And I would hope that if you were in rebellion and you came back expecting for a tongue lashing from God, and instead you got an arms wrap, hug, and a whisper in the ear of, "I love you, child, you are now mine, you have returned home, nothing makes me happier." That should give you some warm and fuzzies on the inside. So how do you react to that? Hopefully with rejoice, with gratitude, which is an action. It is an action that can be with prayer, that can be with worship, that can be with how you live your life, that can be with how you breathe, how you react to just, "I get this again. He loves me enough to keep loving me. And I get to react in that way." Which should lead us to one thing, and one thing only. And that is a decision. I've given you pretty much three choices, and you get to pick which one you are. Are you the prodigal sinner? Living recklessly, living in this life, selfishly, arrogantly, living for yourself. Outwardly and inwardly, everybody knows what's going on. Are you the prodigal sinner? Are you the proper sinner? You're going through the motions, you're coming to church, you think that's enough. I own a Bible, in fact, I own three. And that's enough. I read it all the time. Kind of. Read it more than you do. Right? Are you the proper sinner? Where nothing's actually changed on the inside. Please don't open this up. Please don't ask. Or are you the penitent sinner? The one that knows that the Father loved me even though I didn't deserve it. That when I came back and I said, my bad, he said, you're forgiven. And I love you. So I want you to spend just a little bit of time not talking at your table, but instead talking to the one who loves you. And just say, thank God. If you are the penitent sinner, thank God that you loved me. And here's what I'm going to leave you with. If you found yourself in the penitent sinner's place, know one thing and one thing only. You are on the knife's edge of slipping into being proper or prodigal. You are on the knife's edge of slipping into proper and prodigal if you start to live for yourself. So just spend a little bit of time right now, and if you are the prodigal, I encourage you to return. And if you're the proper, I encourage you to open up and return. And if you are the penitent, ask for his strength and be grateful. Take a couple minutes. Dear Heavenly Father, God, I pray, as we're looking at our own life, God, I pray that we can truthfully see just who we are. God, that we're not blinded by our own expectations, that we're not entitled, but God, that we come to you humbly, hungry, hopeless, and helpless. And God, we love you and are so grateful for you filling us back up, restoring us. God, I pray, no matter how we are coming into this room, God, that we are now in your presence, and that we would see that none of us have earned your favor or earned the right. But God, rather that we are all humbly sitting here looking to you, and you are our worth. God, I pray that we can spend some time rejoicing in that. And I pray these things in your Son's name. Amen. Yes.